You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So yeah, the topic today is how to raise truth tellers and combat lying. So why did I pick this topic? Well, I have these three beautiful children here. My daughter's in fifth grade, and then I have a second grader and a first grader. And I finally went back to work recently because my youngest is in everyday school. And I work with older elementary and then also middle schoolers. And sometimes I'm like walking around the playground and I'll see these middle schoolers like whispering to one another. And then an adult comes by and they stop talking. And I just started thinking, man, my daughter is about to be a fifth grader. She's going to be a middle schooler next year. And what are the secrets she's going to tell her friends, like the things that I'm not going to have access to, the things that I'm not going to hear about? And then I've also noticed my youngest kid, you know, he's in this developmental stage where he's experimenting with, like, when do I tell the truth? Should I tell the truth or should I tell a lie? And I'm noticing that the things that worked with my other two kids aren't really working with him. And it's been very difficult and frustrating. And so I picked this topic because I was like, I need to grow in this area and I need to figure this out because high school is going to be freaking rough. So, yes, that's why I picked this topic. Not that I am an expert, because I wanted to learn. So, that's my fam. All right, so you may say, like, yeah, but when they're little, right? Like, kids are just inherently good. They're sweet little angels, right? That's what Rousseau said in the 1700s. That is wrong. And it's really funny to me. I was reading a book recently, but basically it was going over like philosophy changes. And it's like, why would we listen to this man about children? Because he had five kids that he gave to an orphanage, like as soon as they were born. He is not an expert on children. But a lot of people believe this, like children are just naturally good. That is not true. And recent studies have shown that kids start lying and developing their lying skills at an earlier age than we even thought before. So in this book, Nurture Shock, basically they're giving like updated research where they're like, we used to think these things about child development, but we've done these new studies and here's what the new research says. And so there was the study done on lying where they took little kids, different ages, and they put them in a room, and they had a researcher say, close your eyes, don't look, I'm going to put something out on the table, you have to guess what it is. And they played the game for a little bit, and then the researcher would put something on the table and say, oh wait, I need to leave for a minute, keep your eyes closed, don't peek, and would leave the room. Well, the first thing they've learned is that children learn to lie much earlier than we presumed. In this peeking game study, only a third of the three-year-olds will peek. And when asked if they peeked, most of them will admit it. But over 80% of the four-year-olds peek. Of those, over 80% will lie when asked, asserting that they haven't peeked. By their fourth birthday, almost all kids will start experimenting with lying. Children with older siblings, which makes sense for my youngest, seem to learn it slightly earlier. So yes. Kids lie, and they lie at a young age. They're kind of honing the skill between the ages of 2 and 6. You might also think like, well, we don't have to worry about correcting it right now. It's going to resolve itself. Like eventually they're going to realize the difference between telling the truth and a lie, and then the lies will stop. That is also not true. In the same book, they have found, it says, parents often fail to address early childhood lying, since the lying is almost innocent. Their child's too young to know what lies are, or that lying's wrong. And when their child gets older and learns those distinctions, the parents believe the lying will stop. This is dead wrong, according to Dr. Talwar. The better a young child can distinguish a lie from the truth, the more likely she is to lie given the chance. Researchers test children with elegant anecdotes and ask, did Susie tell a lie or tell the truth? The kids who know the difference are also the most prone to lie. Ignorant of this scholarship, many parenting websites and books advise parents to just let lies go. Kids will grow out of it. The truth is, kids grow into it. So yes, our kids will lie. This is just a part of children growing up. You know, as humans, we lie, we learn this skill. And then this says that, yeah, few kids are an exception. In the same studies, 96% of all kids offer up lies. So, yes, it grows and it progresses the older that they get. So I was thinking about this for myself. Also, a reason I picked this topic is I just remember how much I lied to my parents growing up. But there's this cute story that my parents like to tell about once upon a time when I was a young 4-year-old girl who loved cookies. And one day I walk into the kitchen and I see that no one else is in the room, and the cookie jar, which had been put on the refrigerator because I liked cookies, so it was out of my way, was just there and no one could see me. So I moved a chair up, I climbed on the counter, I reached up, and the cookie jar fell and broke. Well, I look around and I'm like, I'm out of here. So I ran. And then eventually my dad calls me back into the room and is like, hey, do you know how the cookie jar broke? And I looked and I saw my cat. And I said, well, the cat did it. The cat broke the cookie jar. And he's like, oh, why is the chair here up against the counter? And I looked at him like he was crazy. And I was like, well, how else is the cat going to get up there? Like, of course. And they never said anything to me about it. I later confessed that I had done it years, many, many years later. And it just kind of became this joke that we talked about like, hey, remember that time you blamed the cat for breaking the cookie jar? But then years go by, and, you know, I get into middle school, and I'm like, man, I got to hide this grade card because I don't want my parents to see this grade that I got. And then eventually I get to high school, and I'm like, man, I really don't want to take this chemistry test. And so I skip school that day and the next day. And then I skip school for an entire quarter. And the web of lies that I had to tell, like calling the school, pretending to be my mom to say that I wasn't going to be there, trying to run home and delete voicemails or answering machine because we didn't have voicemail at that time, delete those before my mom could hear them. The web of lies was insane, and the anxiety I felt. Now, mind you, I wasn't doing anything crazy. I, like, went to the library and read the whole time, so that's kind of funny. But but let me tell you, that is not a funny story to my parents. Like, when my dad finally found this out, like, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. His color just drained, and he looked sick. And that is still a story they do not want to share because it causes a lot of pain. So this is something that we need to take seriously. So what's the Bible's perspective on lying? Well, the first thing that we should know is that God cannot lie. God is the opposite of lying. He is truth. In Numbers 23:19, it says, God is not human that he should lie, not a human being that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? This is against God's character. But you know whose character it's like? It's Satan's. John 8:44 says, he's talking to the Pharisees, you belong to your father, the devil, and this is Jesus speaking, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He, being Satan, was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native tongue, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So that is Satan's nature, is that of lying. I mean, think about it. That's how sin entered the world. Was Satan spoke a lie and humans believed it. And so here we have Jesus interacting with Satan. In Matthew 4:4, Jesus answers Satan and says, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. Well, what comes out of the mouth of God? That is truth. When we look at his word, that is honesty and that is truth. And it says here that that should be like nourishment to us. Honesty and truth and God's truth is nourishment. It fills us. In 1 John, it talks about how God is light, you know, that we want to walk in the light with God in this path of honesty. And the contrast to that is that when we are choosing lies and Satan's character, that's darkness and death. And think about it. It makes sense. Like, yes, when we're honest, maybe in the moment that doesn't feel good. Like we might have some negative feelings or some negative encounters. But eventually those resolve, and what's left is peace and contentment. And that's life, that's nourishment, that's being in the light. But when we choose to lie, that anxiety, that guilt, that tears at us. and that's death. So this is what the Bible thinks about it. But the truth is, we all lie. Like, this is, we all do. Apparently, I'm reading this book called Spy the Lie, which is very fascinating, and we should all read because your children will lie. It says, on average, adults lie at least 10 times a day, which kind of blew my mind. But think about it. You know, lies aren't just like I'm telling you something that's not true. We can lie with our bodies. We can lie with what we don't say. But yes, we all lie. So I figured we could talk about this because lying, yes, the definition of a lie is something that is not true, right? But there's a lot of different types of lies that we can tell. I'm going to give an example, but then I'll ask this question. What are some different types of lies that we tell? One example is the polite lie, right? Like, you have a meal train, someone brings you food, and you text them and say, oh my God, I loved it, it was so delicious. And actually you're like, that was nasty. Yeah, there is a lot of different types of lies that we give. And the funny thing is, a lot of those ones that we can mention, like even the polite lies, or even some omission lies, we're like, well, that's the right thing to do. We teach our kids to do this. Like, one of the ones, I was asking my daughter about this, like, what are lies that you think we tell? And she's like, well, what about, though, if someone gives you a gift and you didn't like it? Like, you should still say I love it and thank you. So I was, like, torn. I'm like, but that's still a lie. So we were talking about, like, oh, maybe you can say, I appreciate that you thought about me. Like, I can tell you thought about me or something like that. That's not, like, an actual, like, saying you like something that you don't like. But, yeah, we lie a lot. And actually, in the book I was quoting earlier, Nurture Shock, when they did this study, they saw when parents were watching on the outside, they gave kids a gift of a bar of soap. And the kids that, like, were like, oh, thank you so much, and made their faces light up even though you could tell they didn't like it, the parents were, like, proud of them. And the researchers are like, don't you understand that's a lie? Like, but you're, like, proud of your kid for lying right now. Yeah, so we all lie. We lie every day. In this book, The Collapse of Parenting by Dr. Leonard Sachs, he makes this point, though. He said, in reality, behavior influences identity and eventually becomes identity. If you cheat over and over, you are or will soon become a cheater. Your actions will, over time, change your character. If you lie over and over, you are or will become a liar. And we don't want that for our kids. So why do we lie? I was listening to this podcast on mental health, and they had this doctor, Dr. Paul Conte, and he was talking about how we all have this view of self. There's some that we recognize in our conscious mind, but even parts in our subconscious or unconscious that we don't see, and we don't know that we're actually thinking, but we have this view of self. And so we have these defense mechanisms to protect that. And lying is a defense mechanism. We are trying to protect ourselves through lying. Okay, whether we're trying to protect our image, trying to protect our feelings, trying to protect our comfort, we are trying to protect our image of self. Now, for young children, what they found through these studies is that most of the time, young children lie to avoid punishment and not displease parents. Teenagers, they also found similarly, the majority of their lies were that they didn't want their parents to be disappointed in them, which actually shocked the researchers. They thought the majority was going to be fighting for independence. But that was a key factor. There is a point where kids want their independence, and so a lot of their lies are fighting for that autonomy. So in this book, again, Nurture Shock, they did this study where they gathered up teenagers and gained their trust by buying them CDs and fries, which I thought was interesting. But they would get these kids talking and would ask them about different categories of areas of their life. And would ask them, like, do you tell your parents all of these things? And so through the study, they found out that parental authority peaks around ages 14 to 15. In fact, this resistance is slightly stronger at age 11 than at age 18. So actually, it's this middle school to high school age that kids are really fighting for their independence from their parental authorities. So that drives a lot of their lies. So then the question becomes, what do we do? Like, what do we do about this? Our kids are liars. We're liars. Everyone's a liar. What do we do? Like, how do we not be liars? So how do we raise our children to be truth tellers? So I have some points that I want to make in the big picture. These aren't things that are specifically focusing on lying and truth telling, but these are things that will create the character of a truth teller. And then I have some points that are more practical, like what do we do in the moment? Now, I want to make the caveat, too, that I'm really generalizing because, yet again, there's a lot of ways that we lie, and I can't speak to each one of those things. So here's just some general ideas. So big picture, I think the first thing we need to do is help them develop a healthy autonomy. Now, I feel like we use this word autonomy in a negative way a lot, and we don't want our kids to be isolated and completely on their own. We use this word to often mean that they're isolated from other people and isolated from God. And that's not how we are using the word here. So when we talk about autonomy, in this book, The Gift of Failure, which I am currently reading, she describes it as this. It comes from the Greek auto, which means self, and nomos, which means custom or law. So to be autonomous, a child has to have internalized a system of rules for living independently. So this means that instead of having some extrinsic motivation for the choices that they make, like a parental figure, they need to have internalized or have this intrinsic motivation that guides their decisions. In order to help foster the formation of this self-rule, parents have to help kids come up with a system of guiding principles so they will be able to problem solve and think creatively while remaining rooted in tried and true principles of behavior. When parents are over-controlling, kids tend not to think about why and how they act in the world. Their choice is to respond to our rules or not. And so think about it. If our kids don't have these overarching principles, they're just coming up against situations, and that's when lying happens, because they're trying to control these little situations and fight for control in those areas instead of seeing the overarching control and guidance that they have. So when they are given more control over their worlds out of our sphere of influence, they are more likely to make solid, rule-based decisions. It's a win-win situation for parents, really, because autonomy begets autonomy. As kids realize they have control over their worlds, they want more control over their lives and become more responsible. So if we want to raise truth tellers, we have to teach them how to make these decisions on their own when we're not there. Like, what is going to guide them in those moments? And then in Nurture Shock, again, they did this study, the study that I was talking about on teenagers. And they looked at different types of parents of these students as well, or these high schoolers. And they found that the parents that were overly controlling, everyone kind of figured this would be the outcome, they lied the most. Or not the most, I'm sorry, they lied. And they were also very depressed, just to throw that out there. So over-controlling parents that are dictating every area of their kids' lives leads to lying and depression. But then there was the quadrant of parents that were like, oh, I don't want to be that way at all. So they were super permissive and had no rules. And their thought was, oh, my kid will feel comfortable telling me anything. Those were the kids that lied the most, which was kind of shocking. That surprised people. But yeah, they were the biggest liars. It was in this middle ground. It says, ironically, the type of parents who are actually most consistent in enforcing rules are the same parents who are most warm and have the most conversations with their kids, Darling observed. They've set a few rules over certain key spheres of influence, and they've explained why the rules are there. They expect the child to obey them. Over life's other spheres, they supported the child's autonomy, allowing her freedom to make her own decisions. The kids of these parents lied the least. They still lied, because everyone lies, but they lied the least. So we want to help our kids develop and internalize their own set of rules and to give them freedom in different areas so that they feel comfortable and confident in making decisions. Secondly, we need to teach them to embrace failure. I think this is a big deal. The book I was talking about, The Gift of Failure, the whole first section of the book is about this, and I highly recommend reading it. But she makes the case that we have just in our culture a negative view of failure because we are so focused on the outcome and not about the process of how we get there. And so we need to teach our kids that the process, the growth, is actually what's important. We want to have a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset. And so how do we go about teaching our kids to do this? She had one really cool idea she had a lot of cool ideas, but this one stuck out to me. We're having your kid make their own personal goals. Because how quick are we to say to our kids, like, you should grow in this area or do these things? She's like, no, have them pick out their own goals. And she talked about a student that she had that she mentored in a high school. And this girl had her own goal of wanting to become less shy. And over time, she saw growth in that, and she was excited about the changes in her life. So it says, self-imposed goals are about the safest place there is for a kid to fail. If kids make up their own goals on their own timeline according to their criteria, then failure is not a crushing defeat. Goals can be amended, changed according to circumstances, and even postponed to maybe next week. For kids who are particularly afraid and anxious about failing, goals offer a private proving ground, a safe way to take risks, fail, and try again. I was thinking about this because my daughter is naturally just a perfectionist and will shut down and, you know, if she's not the best at something, just be like, I'm not doing this again. So after a while, we got her into climbing, rock climbing, not just climbing random things, but at a climbing wall. And that was really good for her because she had to set her own goals and realize, yeah, maybe I didn't make it to the top of this route right now, but what is my goal along the way? Oh, I want to try this. I want to get to the top of it within a week. You know, I want to practice and get to this point. And that was really helpful for her. And so now she has project routes, is what she calls, you know, I think it's what they call them in climbing. I don't know. I don't climb things. She has her project routes. And she's like, oh, I made it further on this thing today. And it's helped develop that in other areas too. And I've seen that in other areas of her life. And right now she's at this phase where I'll see her doing something. I'll be like, hey, do you want some help with that? And she's like, Mom, I want to do this on my own. Like, I want to figure it out. So yes, we want them to learn how to fail. This lady here, she's a billionaire apparently. So Sarah Blakely, she is the founder of Spanx, which I'm sure a lot of us here, at least for me, I wear them to weddings. Yes, it's a very popular product for moms, the girdle. So Sarah Blakely, she has this billion-dollar company, has made a lot of money, but this was not her first attempt at starting a business. She actually had a lot of failed attempts before this. And so she was interviewed about this, and she's like, you know what? I grew up just being told that failure was a good thing. So her dad, when she would come home, would say to her and her brother, what did you fail at today? And she was like, you know, and then if we didn't have something, he'd look disappointed. And then she'd come home and be like, Dad, I tried out for the sport and I was terrible at it and I didn't make the team. And he'd be like, way to go, like real excited. But she made the point. She was like, he helped us redefine failure to where we didn't see failure as a negative thing. It was a positive, and we realized it was about the process and what we were learning. And so this is something that my husband and I were talking about doing with our kids, is once a week at the dinner table, just saying, what's a mistake you made this week? You know, what's something you failed at, and what did you learn from it? But redefining the word failure for our kids. Because why do we lie? We normally are lying to cover up a failure. So if we can redefine that, we can help them step into truth-telling. Third point, how do we help our kids become truth-tellers big picture? We need to teach the importance of hard work. In American culture, we have something very different than in other areas of the world, where we actually overemphasize being gifted, being talented, being smart, and these like identity statements. And I remember thinking this at school, like a friend would be studying really hard for a test, and I'm like, oh, you had to study for that? I just got it naturally. But then guess what? I didn't build study skills and didn't know how to move forward in that. But we are really quick to overemphasize those things. Oh man, this person should go into music because they're so gifted at it. Not the level of like everyone should have skill in some area. And most cultures have that mindset. Anyone can have skill in any area to some degree. It's just about how hard you try. So there's this famous study done, Dweck did this study where he gave two groups of students a test. One group of students, they said afterwards, like, man, look how smart you are. The other group, they said, wow, look how hard you tried. Then they gave them progressively harder tests. And the kids that were told they were smart did worse and worse on the tests. The kids that were told they tried harder did better and better and actually were excited about taking the tests. Then they gave them a test that was easier than the first one. And the kids that were told they were smart did worse on the easier test even. And then, as like a little side at the end of this experiment, they said, hey, we want you to write down a piece of advice for the next group of kids that takes this test. And while you're at it, please write down your score. And they found that the kids that were told they were smart lied about their score to the incoming students. So they say, we took ordinary children and made them into liars simply by telling them they were smart. You know, we want to value hard work. Not the identity statements of you are smart. I mean, I think about all those times I hid report cards from my parents and lied. It was because I didn't want that image of me to change, where I was like, they think I'm smart. I want them to keep thinking that. Okay. How else do we teach hard work? She has a whole section in this book, The Gift of Failure, on doing chores. But she also says, don't call them chores. Call them contributions to the family, was that you are contributing to the family. And I was like, oh, that's a great phrase, and I need to actually keep that in my brain. But she was like, how often do we try to let our kids help, but we end up stepping in and taking over? So we're trying to let them do something around the house, and then we get in the way of it. She says, there are a lot of reasons parents give for not granting their children the space and opportunity to find purpose. Among them, it's faster to do it myself. They'll just do it the wrong way. Kids should be kids while they can. My house will look disgusting and people will judge me. My kids will look disgusting and people will judge me. We have a lot of reasons, but she says enough. It's time to grant our kids the opportunity to contribute. Allow them the chance to step up, try, fail, and try again until they get it right. And then finally, big picture, just know that your kids will lie. Like, if you ever say to yourself, oh, my kid would never do that, that full stop right there. Like, that should cue you in, something's wrong. I often have the thought, I bet you my kid did that. you just don't know. But assume that your children will lie. It's natural. So what do we do in the moment? So that was some big picture stuff on raising a truth teller, but what do we do in the moment? And I think the first thing is we have to model it. We have to be honest ourselves. And like we said earlier, we do lie. But think about all the times that our kid is in the next room and hears us complaining about having to go do something or having to hang out with someone or go to a meeting or whatever it may be. And then we show up with our kid and we're like, oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. And that's a lie. Like, our kid heard that. They saw that. We have to think about our actions and our words and how is that impacting our child. And I think we have to model to them coming clean on things too. Like, maybe we go back and say, like, man, I had such a bad attitude about this and I actually ended up having a lot of fun, and helping them see the change. Also, we need to try to control our reactions. This is my, wow, this is so hard for me. I am a loud person. And so when I walk into the bathroom and find pee all over the wall, I'm like, ah! I get real loud, like just, ah! And I try to tone this down. And what I found recently, though, is sometimes I'm still just going to be loud and I'm just going to like have an initial reaction. But I do not need to follow that reaction up with, who peed on the wall? You know, like, that does not help. Or when I come home from vacation and we've been gone for a week and I realize someone didn't flush the poop down the toilet. This didn't happen this year. This was a while ago. I don't need to say, who forgot to flush? Because no one is going to own up to that. Like, no one. Rightfully so. But yeah, we need to control our reactions in the moment. And if we have a reaction, do not confront the child in that moment. Give them some space. And calm down. And then once you calm down, set them up for success. So let's not set them up with a question that's going to lead and put them in this position where they want to lie. Like, let's try to set them up for success when we interact with them. If I went right away into why or who peed on the wall, like that is initially, that's going to cause a lie. It's just setting them up for that. So set them up for success. In this book, they did, in the peekaboo study that I quoted earlier in Nurture Shock, you know, where they told a kid not to peek, they added onto the study a whole bunch. And then they did this part where when they entered back into the room, they read the kids a story. Half of the kids, they read the story of the boy who cried wolf. The other half, they read the story of George Washington, where he cuts down the cherry tree but then fesses up to it and his dad praises him for being honest. The kids that heard the George Washington story were 70%, I think it was boys were 70% more likely to be honest and girls 50%. So that story actually had more of an impact. It says, what really works is to tell the child, I will not be upset with you if you peeked, and if you tell the truth, I will be really happy. This is an offer of both immunity and a clear route back to good standing. Tower explained this latest finding. Young kids are lying to make you happy, trying to please you. So telling kids that the truth will make a parent happy challenges the kid's original thought that hearing good news, not the truth, is what will please the parent. That's why the George Washington story and the cherry tree work so well. Little George receives both immunity and praise for telling the truth. The wisdom in the cherry tree applies. According to Tower, parents need to teach kids the worth of honesty just as much as they need to say that lying is wrong. The more kids hear that message, the more quickly they will take this lesson to heart. So we need to set them up for success. And finally, or I don't remember if this is my final point, we need to encourage truth-telling. So when our kids are honest, praise it. Praise it a lot. Oh my goodness, thank you so much for being honest. That makes my heart so happy when you tell me the truth. Those kind of things. In The Collapse of Parenting by Leonard Sachs, he makes the point when it comes to teaching virtue, so any of the virtues, honesty is a virtue, identity seems to work better than behavior. You are a very kind person works better than that was a very kind thing you did. So saying, oh my goodness, I love what an honest person you are becoming. Or I love what an honest person you are. And that warms God's heart. Like you are choosing to go God's way here. Like those things are going to be more encouraging. So recently, my youngest son, who I told you has been my wild card, he was having a bout for a couple weeks of just, you know, something would go wrong and he'd lie about it. And so we had decided we really need to buckle down on trying to teach him to be a truth teller. And finally, we go into his room one day and the curtains are completely pulled off the wall, like the metal bent, like the curtain rod just like busted down. And so we go to talk to him and say like, hey, do you know what happened to the curtains? And you could just see his little face thinking and the turmoil going on in his head of like, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna say? And then he just has a sigh and is like, I was putting on my shoes and I tripped and fell and pulled down the curtains. And we were just like, I think I even like got teary-eyed and was just like, I'm so happy you told me the truth. And his face just lit up. He was so happy. And since then, we've noticed so much more truth-telling. And it's easy in those moments to want to be like, man, but he still did this wrong thing. But it's like, no, he was honest. And that's what I care about more than the fact that he pulled the curtains down or peed on the wall or wrote poop on my wall. So, you know, whatever it is, with a pencil, not with actual poop. But he's being honest, and that's great. Oh, I did have a final point. Final point, help them see their agency and develop empathy. Now, I know I said try to control your reactions, but that doesn't mean that our kids shouldn't see that lies impact people. Like, our lies hurt people. Our lies damage relationships. They damage trust. And I think our kids do need to see that. Because think about it, when we lie, we are focused on ourselves, right? Yes, we don't want to make our parent angry or a friend angry or whatever it is, but it's still about us and our image. We are so focused on ourselves. So helping them develop empathy for another person and helping them see how they are impacting other people helps them get out of their head and into the world around them. We want to give them agency where they see how their actions impact the world around them and the things that happen to them. That was my last point. So that's what I have. Well, Lord, just thank you that you have given us the blessing of being parents and and that you've entrusted us with your children who you love deeply, that you have a purpose for, and that you want to walk in the light with you. And just thank you for that, Lord, and I pray that we can think about these bigger concepts and also just in the moment techniques and be able to think about our child in that and fit them to our child in whatever ways that work for us. So pray for that, Lord, and pray that we can find joy in it as well. Amen.